at algae dynamics here in this presentation. Some pictures here from the San Joaquin River. And I want to make sure that I get my collaborators up there up front and foremost, because there's been a large team of individuals here who have contributed to various aspects of this research. So here's a picture of the San Joaquin River near the Vernalis compliance point. There's a large number of issues here with water quality, of course. And what you do to solve one problem often causes more problems with other issues. So the one I want to talk about right now is dissolved oxygen. And I want to show you that the algae load coming from the upstream portion here is very important in dissolved oxygen down in the ship channel that was discussed earlier. So here's sort of a schematic diagram from Stringfellow and Quinn showing the ship channel here. Water's coming from upstream here, often enriched in algae during the summertime. But we also have, historically, quite a bit of ammonia inputs coming from the sewage treatment plant right next to the Stockton ship channel. So about the summer loads, about 50% of the biological oxygen demand was contributed or believed to come from the sewage treatment plants, and probably about 50% from the upstream portion. And for the Chinook salmon migration season, the dissolved oxygen threshold was set at 5 milligrams per liter. So the objectives of this presentation here are threefold. Number one, to look at spatial patterns of algae in the San Joaquin watershed, so looking for the sources. Number two, to look at some of the temporal patterns that we observe, interannual, seasonal, and diurnal studies. And then throughout the talk, I would like to focus on possible strategy to reduce especially the summer load of algae. Okay, so here is a conceptual model that helps me focus my thinking. Dissolved oxygen here is the issue. It's linked very tightly, of course, to the biological oxygen demand. And among the components here that can contribute are particulate organic matter, non-algal, the algal biomass, ammonium, and dissolved organic carbon. And then we'll work here on some of the factors that control algae in a later slide. You've seen this sort of map before here. The first thing we wanted to do in this study was do a source search methodology to look and see where the biological oxygen demand and the algae were coming from in this system. We had about 35 sites ranging from the three east side tributaries here, and then a lot of intensive sampling of sites near the San Joaquin River and also longitudinally along the San Joaquin River. Keep in mind this red portion here from Millerton Lake down to the confluence with Bear Creek is relatively dry during the summer. Here's a picture of the San Joaquin River in the summer at the Highway 99 bridge, showing that we are not getting our natural flows, and this has a big impact then on the algal dynamics that I'll explain a little later. In terms of a source search methodology, I'll show two diagrams that look like this. This is the biological oxygen demand, or the loads in megagrams per day. And this is the upstream site at Lander or Stevenson. And as we go downstream, we see a relatively large increase in biological oxygen demand. On the right-hand side of the dashed line here, we show the major tributaries and drains coming into the San Joaquin River. And if we look in terms of a mass balance, we find that only 5.9 megagrams of the BOD at the Vernalis compliance site can be explained by inputs from the tributaries and drains. Therefore, we cannot account for the large majority of the biological oxygen demand coming from individual tributaries and drains. If we look at the chlorophyll load, this helps to explain that reason. Again, we see an exponential increase in the growth of chlorophyll here, daily load, kilograms per day, in going from the upstream to downstream sites. And here, if we start to look at the loads coming in from all the tributaries and drains, we see they're almost negligible. So at this point, we conclude that the primary source of the algae is not from tributaries and drains, but in-stream growth during the 3 to 4 days of transport downstream. Okay, so this is very important. So next, we just wanted to show that biological oxygen demand was indeed influenced by the algae. So we have 10-day BOD here, milligrams per liter, versus chlorophyll pigments in parts per billion. And there is a generally a very strong relationship between the two. So therefore, this leads us to conclude that, at least from the upstream portion of the river, biological oxygen demand is linked very closely with the algae. So now if we want to start trying to address this question, what can we do to reduce algae? We can look at things like temperature, light, nutrients, the flow or travel time, seed source, and herbivory as some of the potential controls on algae in this basin. So we've looked extensively at what sort of algae exists there. They are dominantly centric diatoms. Cycotella menigeniana is the dominant one here, shown right in the center. About 80% of the algal species are represented by this single species during the summer months in the San Joaquin River. So how about nutrients? Can we do anything about this? Well, the San Joaquin River has between 2 and 2.5 parts per million of mineral nitrogen, ammonium, and nitrate during the summer months. This is well over an order of magnitude higher than some of the limits that have been suggested to control algal growth. Soluble reactive phosphate, EPA limit of 10 ppb. San Joaquin River during the summer, generally around 100 to 150. And silica, also not a major problem here. Much higher concentrations of silicon than believed to be growth limiting. Therefore, I conclude from this slide that we are really going to have to change agriculture if we want to try to knock down at least an order of magnitude in nutrient concentrations. This will be very difficult, I believe. Light is probably the most limiting resource here with respect to algal growth. This shows the extinction curve of light from 100% at the surface going down here very low at a depth of 1.4 meters. If we look at a depth of about 15 centimeters, we have extinguished about half of our incident light, and at a depth of about 1 meter, we're down to about 1%. Therefore, the photic zone is relatively shallow in this system, but so is the depth of the water, usually ranging less than a couple meters during the summer. But light is believed to be the major limiting factor to growth. We looked at herbivory. We looked at the major invertebrates there. We found lots of cyclopoids and rotifers, but when we started figuring out how much they can eat, their filtering rates can account for less than 5% of the water column per day. Therefore, they obviously cannot have a big impact on decreasing the concentrations of algae. And other studies by some of the clams and other filter feeders out there have also shown very negligible rates of herbivory. Now I'd like to take a look at some of the temporal aspects here, starting with the interannual dynamics. This is from the USGS database for the Bernalis data here. I'm showing flow in cubic feet per second, shown by the bars here, the blue bars, and chlorophyll in parts per billion here, indicated by the green line. So this is a record that extends back to 1975. We see on two of the very dry years here, 1977 and 1992, we see very high concentrations of algae in the water column and very low flows during that particular year. During the high flow year, 1983, we see very high flows and conversely very low concentrations of chlorophyll. So a very strong relationship here between flow and the mean annual summer concentrations of chlorophyll. So here is the mean summer chlorophyll versus flow, defined as May through September. We see a power function here. If we look at the dilution line alone, we've seen it's probably the first part here is just similar due to dilution. However, the algal concentrations are higher during the high flows, and this is probably due to an increase in the wetted surface area, and those waters coming in for dilution are generally clear waters, so the turbidity will decrease and light will increase. So if we change that power function into a linear function doing a log-log transformation, we see that the relationship is relatively strong, R squared of 0.82. And from this sort of data, we can start to put some thresholds in. Say we want to have a 35 part per billion limit. What would it take in terms of flow to achieve this? And it would be something on the order of 2,060 cubic feet per second. So typical summer flows can often be 1,000 cubic feet per second. But to supplement that extra 1,000 cubic feet per second at $100 an acre foot for environmental water, we're talking about a quarter to a half a million dollars per day. So obviously the flow adjustment augmentation is going to be very costly. But it should be quite effective based on this data. Next, I want to show briefly the seasonal dynamics that occurs in the algae concentrations. I have plotted here on a log scale in parts per billion, and in the green line here, the concentrations of chlorophyll. I've also plotted the temperature. Temperature here sort of being an indicator of how much solar radiation has been absorbed by the water body to grow the algae. And we see here over a 5-year record with bi-weekly sampling from 99 to 2004, we see a very strong relationship with highest concentrations of chlorophyll during the summer months, and it follows very closely with the temperature. If I put in the cubic feet per second, the mean summer cubic feet per second flow rates, you'll see it follows what we showed previously there. The higher the flow, the lower the concentrations during the summer months. So it's just during the summer months now, between about June and September, that we are worried about the dissolved oxygen problem in its worst situation. And that links very closely to when the algae are at their highest concentrations. So this used to be the gold standard with respect to monitoring. Every 2 weeks, that was a lot of work to go out and get all this data. But then we started looking at diel dynamics with the advent of the fluorescence monitoring devices that allowed us to take almost real-time data from whatever segment you wanted. And we looked at four sites for a few years here along the San Joaquin River. And I want to just report on one of these sites here. And that's the Crow's Landing site. This shows a 48-hour record of fluorescence, which correlates very well with the chlorophyll concentrations. And much to our surprise, at least initially, was that we saw almost a doubling and halving of concentrations from morning to night. So now we start to get worried that biweekly sampling doesn't really tell you much. If you sample in the morning or sample at night, you're going to get a very different answer. So we wanted to look and see what was controlling this diel dynamics. And just note the very, very linear trends here on the up and down graph, or hydrograph almost here, of the fluorescence or chlorophyll concentrations. So I got to back up here. One thing I forgot to mention was that the minimum occurs between about 10 a.m. and noon, and the maximum occurs right at sunset. Okay, so looking at the whole summer irrigation season now, from April 1 to the end of October, we see a few trends here. The flow is indicated in the magenta, and the chlorophyll from the fluorescence is indicated here in what looks to be black here. And what looks to be a lot of noise every day there in the data is actually these beautiful diel signals repeated one after another. And we see our lowest chlorophyll concentrations at the high flow here at the beginning and the end of the season. And we also see that the shape here of the diel, of the overall pattern, follows basically the day length, with the highest concentrations during the end of June, early July. Okay, so one might ask, well, what is this diel signal due to? It took a couple years to figure it out, but I think we got a pretty good handle on it now. And I just want to show you here a representation of the chlorophyll load, kilograms per day, as a distance from the seed source, which we define as the confluence of the mud slough with the San Joaquin River. So as we go downstream, we see a nice sort of exponential increase here, approximately a doubling a day in the concentrations of chlorophyll. If we then take that data and put the minimum and maximum values in the morning throughout the whole river, we see lower concentrations. At dusk, we see higher concentrations. Okay, so morning and night at a given station. Now, I want you to focus on two points here. Point B is a point of observation where we're going to be looking at this up and down trend. And point A is a distance upstream, 12 hours in terms of flow time. So at point B, we see a doubling approximately during the day, and then you come back in the morning, and it's halved again. Well, how can we explain this? Well, here's the same diagram, and what we've shown now is that we can easily explain the increase during the daytime simply to growth, exponential growth. Now, the decrease at night is not due to herbivory or anything such as that, but it's really that the water from point A is just being transported 12 hours downstream, and it has lower concentrations. So it's simply the growth during the day coupled with the transport or washout during the night that accounts for this diel signal. Okay, now we've sort of isolated two two parameters here that we could probably manage to reduce the algae concentrations during the summer. One is the flow, which is very costly, so I'm going to throw that out. The other is the seed source. The amount of algae up top that is doubling every day as it transports downstream. So here's my diagram again, basically chlorophyll load from the up end, upper part of the river down to Vernalis and beyond. So if we could reduce the seed source at this upstream site, what effect would it have downstream? If we reduced it by half at Lander Avenue, it would reduce it theoretically by half downstream. And that is a huge impact in terms of load. So is it possible to reduce the seed source up here? I think it might be possible, and we are studying with Toby O'Gene the use of wetlands to treat tailwaters. And we have found that in some of these wetlands, especially when they're vegetated, we can knock out the concentrations of algae very effectively, certainly by 50%. So they have to be vegetated, we have to provide the shade. If we have open wetlands, then they're just an incubator for seed source and they tend to multiply. So vegetated wetlands is very key here. And sort of as a schematic here, the dirty stuff comes in, it gets filtered through a nice vegetated mat here. It doesn't have to be long, a few days would be adequate, and what comes out is a much higher quality water. So I think wetlands have the potential here. Of course, dissolved organic carbon, methylation of mercury, and mosquitoes are some reasons not to have wetlands, so we're always battling one water quality constituent against another. With that, I'd like to acknowledge my funding sources and thank you for your attention.
We've had a terrific set of presentations. We have about a 10-minute break. There's a question for Randy. Long time again, actually.
I have to kick off here shortly before the end, so I'll stick around here while others grab a coffee.
We're going to start in 10 minutes. We're going to have about a 10-minute break.
Okay.
On your ideal stuff there, and yep. Sampling, comparing that to sampling every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
What would be the best time then to sample if you want to look at the average?
Right in the middle of the afternoon probably would give you the average. So minimum is noon, maximum is 7 o'clock, so split the difference there. And the other thing I didn't mention is that with respect to the diol signals, it not only occurs for algae, but it occurs for nitrate, phosphate, and BOD. DOC quality changes on a diol time step. The isotopes of nitrogen, nitrate and oxygen on nitrate change. We've documented 18 constituents that change on a diol signal, and we believe it's all linked to the algal growth dynamics is the driver of this. So split the difference there, Charlie, and 4 o'clock might be good. Yeah. Yep.